It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So it's 11 o'clock, and I just realized I forgot to eat anything yet today.
Oh, gosh.
So this is a leftover chopped cheese sandwich that I made last night for dinner with the neighbors. I'd like to open with a segment that's a subsidiary of Tony's Pervert Corner called Tony's Medical Corner.
Oh.
It's a subsidiary because maybe you're a pervert for medical stuff. I don't know. It's not my business. But not you, listeners. I know you're a pervert. So I had my first ever colonoscopy.
Oh yeah.
Oh. I've been trying to think if we actually have any listeners that are young enough that they haven't been due for one yet.
Mm.
And I'm not sure we do, but we might have some that just haven't done it. I assume you have, because you are old.
I have not.
You have not.
No.
Well, you're due. You're extra due now.
Overdue, yeah.
It was 50, and then when I was about 46, it became 45.
Mm-hmm.
And then it took them a year and a half to schedule me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
It's a thing. Definitely a thing. I was told a lot that the prep is worse than the procedure. I think that is fair to say, because the prep was pretty awful. I was also informed of certain, there are different kinds of prep, and some of them are less bad. I was given no options.
Oh.
I was told there were options, and then I got a text from the pharmacy that I had a new prescription waiting for me, and that prescription was just a giant jug with some powder and a little flavoring packet. I did not get to pick. So here's what happens with the colonoscopy, or here's what happened with me with the colonoscopy. First of all, so 5 days before, you have to start on a diet wherein you want to minimize your fiber intake. So you can't have any plant-based high fiber foods. And this means things like nuts, green salad, multigrain, anything. Any fruit or vegetable that has seeds in it at all. There's a bunch of other stuff, but I feel like those were the big tricky ones for me. Luckily, 5 days before was literally the day I went to my in-laws. Oh, and my in-laws are good old-fashioned Midwestern home cooking. There's not a lot of fiber in that food. So I ate a lot of things with noodles and meat involved. I ate a lot of donuts. I ate a lot of pizza. I accidentally ate two slices of tomato, and then afterwards was like, oh crap, wait, that had seeds in it. So that was fine. So I did pretty well. And I was surprised to learn I pooped a lot more when I didn't have fiber in me.
Hmm.
Which is the point of fiber to a degree, is it's supposed to slow down the digestive process, and it gives you more time to absorb the nutrients and everything, but you don't think of it that way. You think of fiber as helps you poop. So you take fiber, you poop more.
Yeah.
No, I poop. Now, to be fair, Caffeine. Without the caffeine, I don't know what the crap would have happened. Caffeine is largely how I get things through anyway, because of the joys of peristalsis. But yeah, I pooped a lot more when I didn't have any fiber, so that was very strange. Then the morning before, and it gets weird. Some timings they're like X number of hours before your appointment, and sometimes it's just this time of day on this day, regardless of when your appointment is. So 8 a.m. on the day before my appointment, I am now on a clear liquid diet. And more specifically, all of my clear liquids can't be blue or red or purple. Those food dyes are bad.
Oh.
For looking in your butthole, I guess. I
But
don't know.
wait, saying clear doesn't already exclude those?
No.
Oh.
Are you not from, have you never been on a clear liquid diet?
No.
Clear liquid diet mostly means transparent liquid diet.
Oh.
So you can have a lot of things, broth, jello, Gator. How I survived almost exclusively was, first of all, protein water, because it was specifically listed as one of the things you could have. And I found it, and I only found one flavor that wasn't red or blue or purple. But it was just flavored water that had like 15 grams of protein in it. So it really helped not make me hungry. And then the other thing is you can have popsicles. But what I got, because my in-laws have them, is Weiler's, the cheap knockoff Kool-Aid people, make freeze pops that are Italian ice flavored. And it's basically a Slurpee in a tube. It's the tastiest thing in the world. And I don't keep them around because I will eat 1,000 of them and it's not good. But that's what I lived off of because I was on clear fluid diet. So yeah, between those, I was not hungry at all. I was craving solid food so much. I didn't have physical hunger because I just ate a ton of those, but I was craving real solid food, and it was not fun. And then you start the prep. How do I describe the prep? So, over 2 days, you drink 4 liters of prep liquid. 2 liters a day. 8 cups twice. You make it and you refrigerate it because they want it cold because then it tastes the least bad. What I had was vaguely lemon, quite salty, gross stuff. And you have to drink a cup every 10 to 15 minutes. And I mean, like for a lot of people, the amount is difficult. That was way less of a thing for me because I drink tons of stuff all the time, but it was gross. So I actually filled a glass with 1 cup of liquid and put a piece of tape marking where it was. And I just sat here and I would fill and I would just neck it. I would just toss it back as fast as I could because it was not fun. But then I would have like 10 minutes in between. It was fine. At one point, the second day was less bad, I think, because I was expecting it. But the first day, it got bad enough that I went and got one of those Italian ice pops. Because it doesn't say you can't have other liquids while you're drinking it. And those tasted way better. So I was like, fuck it, I'm just having one of these, get the taste out. But it's awful. And then, because this is what it's designed for, it just straight up gives you diarrhea. Like, and you haven't been eating except clear liquids, so there's not a lot to come out. It's just liquid, 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 liquid. I have been told this is a terrifying and horrific experience for a lot of people because you gotta wipe your butt so much and it gets real sore. And in fact, people say, like, keep a bowl of olive oil near your toilet to dunk the paper in so that it's not as painful. We have a bidet, which could not recommend more, but now can extra recommend. If you're going to have a colonoscopy, get a bidet first, because if you're just having diarrhea, it cleans it up real nice and nobody has to do any terrible things to your butt. So yeah, it's a terrible, awful, terrible time. And then you go to the hospital, and the hospitals aren't fun in general, but they, back a few years ago, you were awake. Mm-hmm. Like, partially. You were kind of groggy because you had to tell them left or right. I have no idea. But they also, you also didn't remember it real well because of some of the drugs they give you. Now, you're just out. I was just out cold.
Yeah.
And that was way better. So the actual procedure, fine. And I learned this from my sister, and this is a rule. It's like law. So the hospital makes somebody come with you because you're not allowed to, like, drive yourself afterwards and shit like that.
Right.
So somebody's there, and they have to stay there. And it is a law that that person, immediately after the procedure, has to take you out to wherever you want to go. And I had a lot of debate on the subject, and I knew it was going to be somewhere on the far end of the Coralville Strip, because that's where all the family dieting, like, comfort food, mass amounts of, like, carbs, and that was what I wanted after nothing. So, like, Olive Garden was high on the list, stuff like that. I went with Longhorn Steakhouse.
Mm.
And I had a lot of food. And I kept expecting, because by funny coincidence, so I'm on a higher dose of Ozempic now, which is also why I forgot to eat until 11 this morning. And I had my first higher dose the day before I started my clear liquid diet.
Oh.
So I was a little bit nervous that, like, I would eat and it would, because if on higher doses, you get full. And if you ignore that feeling, you will pay for it in bad ways.
Hmm.
But I didn't get full. Like, near the end, I was like, I want dessert. But I was finishing up the rest of it, and I was like, I'm starting to get that full feeling. I don't know. But by the time I left, I was like, yeah, I'm full. But that's about it. So, because my mother had colon cancer, I was told I have to do this every 5 years. But after it was done, the doctor said that I guess my butthole looked so good that we can wait 10 years. So, and I'm pleased for that, because it's not a good time. But. No. As somebody whose mom had colon cancer, it's important. There aren't a lot of other ways to determine if you got hinky stuff going on up there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, back when my dad used to do it, it was this prep is a miracle, because back in the day, the prep was a barium enema. Mm-hmm. Like, my dad literally got like a bike tire needle, like, put in there, and then they filled him up, and then he had to go to the bathroom and, like, pull it out and sit on the toilet in the hospital, but it still just sprayed barium everywhere. Like, it was an enema. Now they figured out how to make you drink your enema, and then that doesn't sound right. I apologize. That's not how that was supposed to be. But the point is, you drink stuff, then you don't got to put anything up there, so that's nice. But it's still pretty gross. Y'all should get it done, though. It's important. Colorectal cancer can be very, very bad. And this is the only way to check it. So, William, get it done. Young man.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be real embarrassing if your heart didn't kill you, but your butt does. Like, I will talk about that at the memorial if that happens. So.
Okay. I mean, I'll be dead.
General, I don't think you want to die before me. I'm going to say some terrible stuff at your funeral.
Oh.
I mean, stuff that I think is funny, but in general, I don't think the other people are going to have a good time with it. So it's probably safe just to live longer.
I mean, I won't be there, so I don't care.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world where you get a pervert corner and a medical corner. I really don't think any other podcast does that. Shout out, by the way, to the one who I don't know that he listens anymore, but he's still out there, Ser Guido, who, if you're listening just the audio version, the intro and outro is him. He liked the post on Facebook the other day, so he at least still knows we exist. Craig liked the post on Twitter, so he at least knows we still exist. So thank you for that. And Azhatalan got mad about movie reference, so he knows we exist. So shout out to all you dudes. Welcome, won't you? I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 704. I
How
mean,
you?
it's kind of one thing for you to talk about your colonoscopy on podcast. It's another thing to do it while you're eating. There's something oddly poetic, I guess, about that.
I feel like it's in general, it's within my vibe.
Yeah, it's definitely that.
I was excited, because we have a taste of fall this last week in terms of weather. I think it's going away again. I don't think fall is actually here, but I wanted to cook things that are more for cooler weather, and so chopped cheese is one of my favorite. It's really funny because the children next door hate everything. And so I bring this and they're like, "What is this?" And I'm like, "It's chopped cheese." They're like, "What the crap is that?" I'm like, "You've had it multiple times. You really like it." They're like, "Oh, okay, whatever." But then one of them opened the foil on it and they said, "Oh, it's this." And I was like, "Yeah, sorry. I should have established it's this."
I should have established
Yeah, I
it's
should have said, you know, this.
this.
So they were pleased after that. But this is my variation on a chopped cheese, which is a very famous New York bodega sandwich. I think mine is not at all the way it's supposed to be. But
So I
you
don't
like it.
know.
It's
I
tasty.
don't know what it is.
A chopped cheese was invented in the 90s in bodegas in Harlem. And it is basically a ground, it's sort of like a loose meat sandwich, but there's cheese involved and there's often lettuce and tomato involved. And it's on like a hero bun. What I created is just some ground beef and onions, and then American cheese melted into it, and a few other seasonings and things. And then I just spoon them onto basically hot dog buns, and then wrap them with foil, and they're really tasty. It's a bit of a deconstructed cheeseburger, or an overly constructed cheeseburger,
How's
however.
it different than like a Philly steak hoagie or something like that? How's it different from that?
Well,
Because
for
it sounds
starters, it's ground beef.
ground beef. Oh, yeah, I guess that is different.
As American cheese, a traditional cheesesteak is going to be cheese whiz or provolone, depending. Also, you would normally put lettuce and tomato on it, which I did in the early days. But now, because I wrap them up in the thing to sort of steam them, the lettuce and tomato get kind of droopy and it's not fun. So.
Well,
I don't do that anymore. All right, how's your week been? I'm gonna eat this while you talk about your week.
it's been all right. So, we pick up, we don't really prevent ourselves from watching, supernatural thrillers or horror or whatever during the rest of the year, but we kind of pick up the pace around this time of year, early September. So we've been kind of looking through Shudder actually to see if we can find anything. And so we did watch Nope the other night. We hadn't seen Nope before.
Nope. How'd you feel about Nope?
I mean, it was a good piece of film craft, I thought. Very well directed, very well shot, very well acted. I guess I thought the script was good too. But the story didn't really resonate with me much. It didn't I wouldn't say it's the kind of story that I'm generally gonna get into or like. But I mean it wasn't a bad film. It just wasn't my kind of thing, I don't think.
I think I was in a similar vein. It's a good film, but it took a while for me to admit that because I love the movie Get Out like it was a person in my life.
Yeah,
And I
it's quite
also
good.
really like Us. I don't think it's as good as Get Out, but I think it's quite good. And Nope, in my opinion, was not on par with either of those. But I don't think that's necessarily a fair comparison because those were both pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty good.
I think the thing about Peele is, so I go back to his Twilight Zone run, which I feel like, okay, so it just would be hard for anyone to do Twilight Zone today, right? If you watch old Twilight Zones, you can always guess what the ending's going to be and all that stuff. I mean, we are conditioned now to, they're just not going to work like they did. But that said, I don't think anyone could do it as better than him. I thought what he did was good. Him doing the Rod Serling bit himself, perfect.
I will admit that part was really good. I like
Yeah,
that.
there, you know, that's always been a little bit of a problem with other people doing it, is not just that the episodes themselves are a little off, but whoever's doing the Rod Serling piece, not convincing, not doesn't have the gravitas, doesn't have the whatever. He does it great.
Yeah.
I
Well,
to
and you got to get into that headspace without just doing a Rod Serling impression, which is
right.
the other thing.
And I think the reason it works is because he is that guy. I mean, he is the Rod Serling of our generation, no question in my mind. Which that there's good in that, there's mediocre in that, and there's bad in that. But so sometimes it just like Rod Serling, there's going to be hit or miss, and I think that's, but it's always going to be high quality, right? It's always going to be high quality, whether it hits with you, or whether you saw the, you know, whether you saw the end coming, or whether you think, ah, that idea wasn't that great. It's always going to be high quality stuff. And you know, I like that stuff. Even if it's not good, I'm like, yeah, I see what you're trying to do there. That's pretty cool. Let's see the next one. You know, that's the way I am with that kind of thing. So that's the way I felt about the film, was like, yeah, I see what you were going for there. I know it probably worked for some people, didn't work for me. That's okay. Let me see the next thing, because it's you, so I know it's at least going to be a good idea. It's at least going to be well made, well crafted. I'm at least going to really respect and admire the effort.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch any movie he makes for sure. We
Pretty, yeah,
failed
I'm going to
pretty
too.
early on Twilight Zone. I think we felt a really sort of jarring disconnect with the Twilight Zoniness of it and the updated social commentary in every episode. And they just It just it didn't the metaphor didn't tie. I was like, if this is your message, this plot makes no sense. Or if this is your plot, this message feels like we just had a few where it just didn't resonate for
No,
us.
yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that.
And we had two or three in a row, and we were like, eh, we're just gonna skip it.
No, I totally see that. But for
But
me,
well, and production wise and performance wise, it was brilliant stuff. Yeah, it just didn't really. The two didn't jive in the right way.
I just liked that it hit that mood or vibe in a way that nobody else except Rod Serling ever had. And I just like that. I like being
Yeah.
in that. So things like what you're talking about, I notice it, but what I get out of it is I just like to, you know, I like to be in that space. Kind of like when people like, well, I think I feel this way about a lot of DC stories too. It's like, I just like DC. I just like
Yeah.
that world. I just like those people. And so I can forgive a lot of things. It's, I just like being in, I just like feeling like I'm watching a Twilight Zone episode. And for the first time since Rod Serling, I did. And I think it's because, like I said, Peele, he is that guy. And when he hits it, it's so good. It's worth giving every single one a chance. And also for me, it's worth noticing how, okay, you didn't hit it this time, but look at all the good stuff you did in how you shot it, how you cast it, how you know, it's, all
I
the
would
other.
never have gone so far as to say it was bad, for sure.
So yeah, I look forward to whatever else he does, because I think he's brilliant. Seems like we watched something else that this was a we watched something that was a Shudder that you might even have talked about before, but well, one thing we're watching that wasn't a movie was Shudder did this thing with about cursed movies. It's a documentary.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Because I didn't know, I hadn't heard like all of the stories behind some of these movies that are supposedly cursed,
Yeah, some of them get real weird.
like The Omen or
Exorcist.
Exorcist. The thing about this, so this show doesn't just talk to like, Richard Donner and all these people that were involved in these movies. It doesn't just talk to them and get their take on it. They'll bring in skeptics that talk about, we just see patterns and things and so on. But then they'll bring in like a practicing exorcist or a self professed practitioner of black magic or witchcraft or whatever to talk about how they see it or what they think of it. It's pretty interesting actually how they put it together. So we've only
I
seen
like when
a
the doc
couple.
can balance that stuff pretty well.
We've only watched the Exorcist one and the Omen one. The Omen one was especially interesting because some of the cursed stuff around that was well, for example, Gregory Peck, who was in the Omen, he switched flights. He was flying to get to the shoot or whatever. He switched flights and the flight he switched from crashed and everybody, died on it. And some people use that, oh, see, this production is cursed. But the production people were like, well, it sounds like it's blessed because he
No, that's good luck. That's
yeah,
good luck.
most of the things with the Omen were like that. All most of the bad things they connected to it that were a curse actually helped the production.
Were almost bad things, yeah.
So even when they were, when they went through this part of the documentary and they got to the end, they asked people individually, including Richard Donner, who directed it, did you think this was cursed? No, I thought it was blessed because some bad things happened, but they pretty much all worked in our favor. So that was kind of interesting.
But people want a movie like The Omen to have been cursed.
Well, see, that's another thing. So in the Exorcist one,
Nobody's ever like, oh, you know what was a really cursed movie? Pollyanna, starring Hayley Mills. Like, that doesn't come up.
In the Exorcist once, one of the people involved with the project said, one of the promotional people admitted to me that that was part of their promotional strategy was to talk about how cursed the movie was. So,
Well, and The Exorcist was cursed in a different way, in that it was one of those filmmakers who just was willing to torture and beat the shit out of their cast
yeah,
and
they talked
crew,
about that
which.
too. They talked about that too. So I'm interested because I've always been the kind of person I have always enjoyed the making of a movie that more than the movie. That's always been true. So this is a pretty interesting thing. But it seems like there was another movie we saw that you had seen, but I don't remember
That
now.
doesn't sound like me.
We saw another one called Our House last night. That wasn't that great.
Not his house, our house.
Our house, yeah.
I don't know that movie.
Where this kid is trying, well, college kid, he's trying to create a machine that'll give wireless electricity, but it ends up bringing back the dead. And
That happens. That's why you
yeah,
shouldn't do it.
as you often say, hijinks ensue. And what was the other one? Yeah, I don't remember, but we have kind of turned up the pace and the volume on that kind of stuff. So maybe I'll have some more of that stuff to report, but
There's a so
Joe.
the fifth or the sixth Paranormal Activity movie called The Ghost Dimension. I haven't seen it. I haven't watched any of them, but I have watched Jordan talk about them. and they're talking about it, and the hook for that one is they found a special camera that instead of having three picture tubes in it has six, and this allows it to essentially see ghosts and demons. But it's really funny to watch them get really excited about this, and they're like, most of these cameras just have three tubes. This one has six. And this guy who knows is like, whoa, really? And so the guys making the video were live. They're like, that's too many tubes, man. That's and the cameraman filming Jordan is like, I hate to say it, but that many tubes, you're gonna see ghosts, man. You're gonna get that with that many tubes, you're definitely gonna get some ghosts. Like, yeah, you gotta
Oh,
watch it.
yeah, we saw Late Night with the Devil too. We saw that.
Oh, and
Well, I really liked it. I thought, I mean, it wasn't like creepy or something, but someone growing up who watched. It was really, it
that's
really.
see, that was the thing for me. Outside of the horror movie, they just did a really good job of making a 70s late night show, including a lot of very obvious stand-ins for real celebrities
Yeah,
of
like
the time.
James Randi and I mean, I could have lots of people, but like I was tra completely transported back to. You know, because I would watch late night only when I was at my grandma's house, who she just lived down the road or whatever. And God, I was just like, I can't believe how this is totally transporting me back to 1977 and watching, you know, Johnny Carson or whatever else was in late night and all the stuff. Like it was very authentic. Like whoever put this together. I can't, they must have lived during that era too, because I don't know how they could have put it all together like that. But, and I thought the performances were really good.
It was marvelous. I was a little heartbroken. I wanted more story. There were a lot of questions very deliberately left unanswered that I really wanted answered. Like, by the end, it was a little confusing what exactly had happened, which can be good in a movie, but for me, I was just like, no, I want these pieces you're not having. So it was a good movie and I enjoyed it, but I got disappointed because it didn't give me things I wanted it to give.
Yeah. But I mean it's not
But that's
usually.
a deeply personal
Yeah.
opinion about it.
I'm not saying that this is the kind of movie or horror story that I would generally. Well, I can't say that. I mean the plot of it
No,
is
on its
actually.
face, it's exactly what I want.
No, right. Me too. Me too. Me too. But I wouldn't say that it like delivered in that way what I typically would like a movie to deliver, but it delivered so many other things. Felt like
No, I definitely
I
agree. I
really
mean,
like watching this. This is, and
crazy
what's
performances.
the actor's name who played the main guy?
Oh, I don't know, but he's finally getting his due. He's in everything. As a character actor, that he was Polka Dot Man in the Suicide Squad, and I think he did a lot of Lynch stuff in the early days. He's been around forever, but he is finally getting like, and he's been an amazing actor. I've
Well,
always
I mean,
loved
yeah, he was in the second
him, and he's finally getting
Nolan.
sort of thrust into the spotlight.
He was in the second Nolan Batman.
Oh,
That's
was he
not,
in Dark Knight?
yeah, that wasn't the first thing he was in, though. I'd seen him in some other things, but I
No.
think they were mostly small potato stuff. But that's like the first big movie I saw him in. He didn't really have much of a speaking. I don't know if he said anything.
He gets a lot of interesting side characters. He, like I said, I think he was in Mulholland Drive and some other things, and
Oh, yeah, maybe he was.
he traditionally gets side characters that are creepy in a way that is hard to identify. But now he's absolutely amazing, and I'm just so glad he's finally popping off.
You're right. This lead role was a little different because he was like not, he wasn't just some side character weirdo. He was like the guy
He was
who,
the man,
yeah, but not just the lead of the film, but someone whose role was supposed to be charismatic and popular and all this other stuff.
and he
And
pulled
he
it off.
pulled it off
Yeah,
100%, 100%.
he's fascinating. I wish I could remember his name. I
I don't
need to
remember his
learn
name
it because I
either.
think it's going to come up a lot more now.
Well, I hope so because he was really good.
Yeah, he's really kind of finally getting his he he's Bryan Cranstoning, as it were. Cranston, people don't know that. Everybody's like, oh, Breaking Bad, but first he was the father in Malcolm in the Middle. How weird. Yeah, before that, he was in every goddamn B movie in the history of the world. Mm-hmm. Look up his IMDb credits. He was in a ton of stuff, and a lot of it was absolute garbage. Mm-hmm. And he was always really good, but he was a jobbing actor for decades.
Yep.
Before even Malcolm in the Middle, let alone Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard him talk about this. I've heard him talk about this. He considered Malcolm in the Middle as his break, but yep. Breaking Bad was his big break. he calls it. Before that, he was working. He did lots of stuff.
He just did decades and decades.
Oh yeah, he didn't think of himself as having his break, and he was 40, I think, when Malcolm. Was
thing. And I agree with him. Yeah. Like, because he was in a bunch of stuff and none of it was particular, but he plays the CIA guy, or he's the villain, or he's played megalomaniacs in various like action movies and stuff. He's been around forever, but he finally got his side. And the same thing with this guy. I think he's finally Bryan Cranston.
Well, when Cranston talked about this, it was in the context of, you know, I hear people, they're going to come out to LA and they're going to give it a year and see how it goes, or whatever. He says, that's not how it works at all. You know, to him is persistence. And I think his point also was, if he hadn't gotten his break or big break, he still would have worked. You know, that's just, that's the business. He's grateful that he got those two breaks, but what if he didn't? It's just, this is the job. This is how it works.
Yeah.
And he thinks that people who come out thinking, well, I'll give it a year or two and see if I make it big right away. No. I mean, some people might do that, but almost nobody does. It's more like his story is closer.
John Hamm spent decades trying to get famous and failing. He got cast in every goddamn pilot in the history of the world that didn't get picked up. And I recently found out he was not the first one offered the role in Mad Men. I forget who it is now, but somebody who was already established was offered that role and turned that down for reasons. So, and that's what did it. If it weren't for Mad Men, he'd still be kind of stuck. But
well,
and he's gone out. Don't get me wrong, John Hamm's amazing, but that was what got him noticed, and then went on to other things.
Most things are like that, though. I mean, most things in life. I mean, I've heard other people say, "Well, you don't." You're not going to make any real money or have any real place in your whatever it is you're pursuing until you're 40 at best. And sometimes it's later than that. It's just persistence is the key, really, not just to acting or entertainment, to everything, really. You just have to
quit. I think that is a tough lesson for people to learn in life, especially because there are exceptions and those exceptions are famous.
Yeah. And
so you don't hear about Bryan Cranston working for decades. You hear about people seeing Justin Bieber on YouTube singing and making him a megastar.
No, I know. It does happen. You're right. It does happen.
But it is extremely rare, and everybody thinks they're the exception. And I fell for it too. Several. I thought I was going to be the next J.K. Rowling. Glad that didn't happen for a variety of reasons. I thought this podcast was going to absolutely blow up. Like, I mean, I knew it wasn't true, but I still kind of felt like it was going to.
Well, I think
you're like, you just need that luck, you know. No, my friend who has his own business, making the fabrication lab, he kept thinking like it was just going to blow up immediately, and it didn't. And to his credit, he didn't give up. And it's been a decade now, and it's a functioning business that like is not in danger of dying, and like he has got it working. But he had to work his butt off for a decade to make that happen.
I'll say this though, if whatever it is you're going to do, go into it thinking that it could blow up. I mean, have that kind of dedication and commitment to the quality of it. I think it's okay to have that attitude, like, this is going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread. To have that kind of confidence and that commitment, I think is good. But
I
also
feel incredibly liberated now that I don't think about that anymore.
Okay. And that's fair too. But, you know, I feel like whatever I put my effort into, it's like, well, the level of my effort and commitment to this is going to be that high. And if it doesn't work, well, at least I can say, well, I put in 100%.
I believe it with you. You are going to be the next Dr. Phil. Definitely.
I don't even know about that.
Oprah's going to discover you.
Oprah, yeah. No, I'm not going to get discovered. But I do think that...
You said that in a very sinister way. I'm going to get discovered. No one knows where the bodies are except me.
Right. What is it? What's that thing about the devil and nobody knows who he is? What is it? The greatest lies that
he doesn't exist. The greatest trick the devil ever played was convincing people he didn't exist.
Didn't exist, yeah.
He exists, and he's opening a therapy practice in Coralville, Iowa.
That's funny because some of the black magic people in that episode about the omen I was just talking about are saying, that's ridiculous. The devil wants you to know when he does things. I thought, well, I mean, from a Christian perspective, I don't think that's true. I think Christians generally think of the devil as the father of lies, and the devil doesn't necessarily want you to know what's going on. I can see the Christian point of view on that, but I can see the black magic point of view on that, which is, oh, demons always want you to know.
Yeah.
It's them. It's like, well, I guess that kind of also makes sense, but I think it all depends on your point of view.
The devil's got a complicated job. It'd be hard to be the devil.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on there. It'd be hard to be God also, but yeah. I think there's a lot of subtlety to it in ways that it's tricky. Well, he's got a job. He's not just a dick. He's got a job. I mean, he's also a dick, but he's got a job.
Well, what is the devil's job?
Well, depends on your paradigm.
Okay.
But the most commonly held one that I see in a lot of fiction now is essentially, you know how there are people, companies that get paid to like break into your shit?
Yeah.
Like to test your security. Right. He does that to humans. He tests. Oh. He is the existence of testing humans to see if they're going to suck.
Mm.
And then he gets their souls.
So he's a tester. He gets their souls.
Yes. Yeah. Because they go to hell if they don't pass.
If they don't pass the test.
Yes. Mm. Which can vary from just being a jerk to explicitly not relying on God and only God to save you.
So the
variations on whether you pass or not change a lot in different stories.
But. So the stakes of for passing or failing are like absolutely the highest possible stakes.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So.
Which is why it pays for people not to know that that's who he is. If they think he's simply a mundane record producer, they might sign up. Whereas if he's like, I'm the devil, you want a record deal? They might be less likely. They'd be like, is this going to cost my soul?
And what's he get out of it? What's he get out of it?
Well, that's a whole issue for debate. Again, an argument can be made. It's his job. But then there's another argument. Actually, the movie Nefarious hit on this a little bit. There's various versions. Lucifer might hate God and want to take his children away from him. Or, and this is the one I'm fond of, he hates humanity because humanity was given free will and the angels were not. Free will is Lucifer's deal. In theory, he fell because he was like, fuck God, I want to make my own decision.
But he wasn't given free will, though. How could he do that?
Well, that's where it gets tricky. Technically, he had free will in terms of his thoughts, but as an angel was required to do certain things. But he did rebel. I like a lot of versions where Lucifer's rebellion and fall are also part of God's plan.
Hmm.
Like he knew that there needed to be a devil and he made Lucifer specifically to end up being a devil. I like that version, but there's a lot of different versions.
And so
I pull a lot of mine from Neil Gaiman.
All right, so what he gets out of it is he hates humanity, and so every time he can make a human suffer for eternity, that's
punishing humans and or keeping them from God, because that supposedly is the big thing about hell, is the true absence of God.
Or it could be both, I guess, right? Like he could hate God and it humanity. Could be two things. Both. Okay.
Maybe he's just a people person.
So he has an unquenchable sense of vengeance, like it's an eternal vengeance.
Supposedly, I mean, again, certain versions, he gets sick of it and he closes up hell and gives the keys to somebody else to figure out. Because he opens up a nightclub in LA. Literally the plot from Sandman and Lucifer.
Yeah.
The devil was like, this is bullshit. I don't want to do this job anymore. I'm going to go to L.A. Play piano. Get wild.
Interesting. I didn't belong to denominations that were fire and brimstone denominations, really.
Yeah.
I mean, they believed, I think, in Satan as Lucifer specifically, because I mean, not everybody does.
The fallen angel aspects of the devil, I believe, are exclusively within the Apocrypha. I don't think the actual official allowed Bible talks about Lucifer as a fallen angel who rebelled against heaven. He's just the antithesis. He's just the dark one.
No. And so some churches didn't talk about it at all. I think they even, there wasn't a problem with many of the parishioners and even some of the clergy not believing in a literal hell or a literal devil, just sort of, it's all figurative.
Yeah, no, I know a lot of denominations that just don't actually believe in hell.
And the Seventh-day Adventists, believe in literal, you know, Lucifer, Satan is Lucifer, fallen angel, whatever, and they believe in the eventual destruction of all evil. Like there's not an eternal hell that you burn in forever. It's all evil is destroyed, and Lucifer and his angels and people
with them.
And also you don't go like right to heaven when you die. There's a resurrection. So you, whatever. And that Seventh-day Adventists are the only ones that believe those things. That's just what Seventh-day Adventists believe.
I've heard it argued that within Christianity, the concept of heaven as the ultimate reward is a relatively new concept.
Right. So like Seventh-day Adventists and many other Christians believe that heaven is going to be earth after it's cleansed of evil and redeemed or whatever. Not that there isn't a heaven. There is. But that's not where we're going to live in eternity or whatever. We're just going to live on earth, restored earth. But in that, all of that, whether the devil and hell are figurative or they exist in the way I just described from the Seventh-day Adventist perspective, you know, there's no sense that Lucifer, Satan, whatever, has a job. It's just a sense of he's an angry, bitter, hates God and God's children. Hates humans because he feels like they were elevated above angels.
Also they got a soul whereas angels didn't get a soul.
Well, they wouldn't put it that way, but they would say humans were elevated above angels in some respect. So he's just bitter, angry, jealous, and so he tortures people because he's a sadistic jerk, and eventually that's just going to stop.
I mean, that's why I do it.
He's not in charge of anything. Well, actually Seventh-day Adventists and a lot of other Christians would say he, in a way, is in charge of earth. He took dominion of earth at the fall as like, so some people believe, and a lot of Seventh-day Adventists believe this, I don't know if they all believe this, in the book of Job, there's a description of Satan, the accuser. I mean, again, it's not necessarily Lucifer in the text itself, but a lot of, you know, people believe that, goes to this meeting of the sons of God. And what they think that is like, these are the angels that are in charge of planets. And Satan is showing up because he's in charge of Earth, because Earth has fallen. So he's in charge there. So, and that's why he's mad at God, because he feels like God is interfering on his planet by giving favors to Job. And that's why when he talks to God about, well, you know, let me do whatever I can to Job, and then we'll see how faithful he is to you. And God's answer, from the perspective of Seventh-day Adventists, a few other people, is when God says, well, do whatever you want, he's not really giving permission to Satan to do whatever he wants. He's reminding Satan, well, this is your planet. What you can't you do whatever you want with this guy? Why are you complaining to me? And that's what's really happening. And that's what, but Job remains faithful. You know, that's the whole story of Job. So I guess some people
Seventh-day Adventists would not make good screenwriters.
the point is, some people think that if Lucifer has a job, it's he's the lord of this planet. And accept that Jesus came and kind of bought it back, you know, with his sacrifice and everything. But we humans still have a choice. Are we going to recognize Christ is the king of this planet, or are we going to recognize Lucifer as the king of this planet? We get to choose.
Those are my options.
Those are your options. But I mean, that's all very interesting.
I've heard some really good arguments for making John Stewart king of this planet. Could I write in a third?
If you want, I don't, not the choice I'd write in, but I don't know who
it was. Just all I could think of people that like to lift up random people. Everybody thinks John Stewart should be leader of everything, except John Stewart. I don't think he thinks that.
Granted, I agree. I don't think he thinks that. So yeah, I think, you know, we've talked about this before, about how my view of Satan in our culture is that it's evolved into a concept that allows us to be suspicious of our own thoughts, feelings, motives, emotions, and whatever, and to be suspicious of other people too. And when I say suspicious, I'm saying this in contrast to merely being reflective, right? It's okay to question these things, but crossing the line into a nagging suspicion where you're paralyzed with fear about what you're going to do, or questioning your own worth or ability to make a good decision, or constantly being suspicious of other people. You know, I think the devil has been used as a weapon, really, to erode trust.
Yeah.
Trust with people of themselves and others.
And I don't know who the guy is, but if I did, I'd say, wow, you did a really good job of doing that. That's some pretty snazzy work you got there. Whoever he is, whoever this secret evil genius is, I certainly don't know.
Well, I mean, the church used it to great effect, to the point where they could control huge areas of Europe with, you know, with churches that were basically manned by one person, garrisons of one, and they had a lot of control over Europe that way. To me, it was the devil concept and how they used it that allowed them to do that in a way that no previous empire could do.
Yes, I wonder who did that.
Anyway, I find these discussions interesting. I don't know if our listeners do. I don't care if you do.
That's fair.
No, yeah, I actually do care. And you know I do. But I guess you only have a little bit of time to talk about your week now.
Yeah, got about 8 minutes. It's too bad because I got quite a list.
Oh, good.
They are almost entirely movies. But I do want to say I've been playing a ridiculous amount of the video game Balatro. Enough that I purchased it on one console and then purchased it on a different console at the same time. All it is a roguelite that is poker. You're just playing poker, but like you get different jokers or different other types of cards that change the way the cards work. It reminds me a little bit of something called Nightmare Chess, which was a collection of cards you could get from Steve Jackson Games that changed the rules of chess. So like I'm playing chess, but I play this card and it means that this piece can now move in different ways, or like this, I play this card and this piece after its move explodes and it's gone, but everything in an adjacent area is gone. Or this card means when you put my king in check, it turns out that wasn't really my king. He's hiding over here, and just crazy shit. And I had a friend, we used to get together weekly to play chess. We'd play a couple games of regular chess and then what we called crazy chess. And this is basically that as poker. And it's just real, there's nothing to it, and it's just real compelling. I've just been putting hours and hours just playing it over and over again. It's a fun time. Anyway, I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about some movies I've seen. The most important being, so when I was visiting my in-laws, people were very busy doing stuff, so I mostly just sat around in the living room with my mother-in-law, and I played on my Switch, and she watched things on television. And she was looking for stuff on Amazon, scrolling through, and she happened on a movie I had never heard of from 1982, starring Jean Stapleton, aka Edith Bunker from All in the Family. It was a made-for-TV movie in which she played the lead, and it was called Eleanor Roosevelt, First Lady to the World.
Yeah, I've seen that.
You have? I lost my mind. I was like, oh my God. And I told her, I'm like, you don't have to watch this. I'm gonna watch this, but I can watch it later. But she's like, no, fine. Let's watch it. Because Jean Stapleton and Alice Ghostly, who was an aunt on Bewitched, but is probably best known as the friend Bernice in Designing Women. Both of those actors, if I ever see that they are in something that is not All in the Family, Designing Women, or Bewitched, I am all over it because I love both of them, and that's all they ever did was that one role. So I love seeing them do other stuff. Also, I love Eleanor Roosevelt. Also, I love made-for-TV movies. Also, I love the fact that in the early 80s, they did not understand Eleanor Roosevelt. So it's amazing. She's amazing. Everyone else is pretty terrible. Like, it is not a well-acted film, outside of, in my opinion, Jean Stapleton. It is very clean cut in ways that I don't think hold up to scrutiny. It's hilarious. I had such a good time with it. When did you see it?
Oh, back in the day,
Do you remember it?
mom was in particular a fan of Jean Stapleton because she was in Cold Turkey and she'd been in Winterset and Greenfield and stuff. In fact, it's like the 30th anniversary of the movie or whatever. She was in Greenfield. I went to see her. In fact, I was in the crowd and she was up on stage with a whole bunch of people, Dick Van Dyke, everybody that was in the movie. And certain people got up to talk, but she didn't. And there was a moment where I don't know where they were going to move on with the program. And I don't know what came over me, but I shouted that I wanted to hear from Jean. I wanted to hear what she had to say about her experience. And everyone else was like, yeah, Jean, duh, yeah, speech, Jean. And Jean Stapleton got up and talked a little bit about it, which was amazing. It was awesome. She said how wonderful it was to her experience being in Greenfield. Everybody was so kind and stuff.
This is amazing. I've never felt this before. I think I'm proud of you. Good job.
Yeah, yeah. So I would love to have met her because just because I always liked her. Mom always liked her. She's so amazing. Yeah, we saw it on TV. When it was first on, we saw it on television. I don't remember a lot about
it. It is very interesting. It is so modern historical scholars are pretty sure she was pretty gay.
Eleanor Roosevelt. Yeah, I've heard that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, she had an assistant housekeeper valet, for lack of a better term, named Tommy, Mrs. Thompson or Ms. Thompson, but she was called Tommy. And it is largely speculated that was probably her partner.
Well, of course, back in that day, back when this thing aired, that was probably being talked about on like college campuses and stuff. But I mean, you know,
and Tommy heard of that. Features very heavily in this movie.
Oh,
and they are very close. In fact, there's a very strong implication that basically the way they treat that character is sort of like the child she never had, even though she had two children that the movie makes clear she wasn't a very good mom to because she was too busy being Eleanor Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It also has a grandson in it who is very taken with his grandmother. And I understand it was 82 and it was different. They play it off. He's too into his grandma, like in a way that feels weird.
Okay.
Like taking her to dances and kissing her on the cheek in public with it feels weird. He's way too into it.
Okay.
But it's just like I don't put any stock in a single piece of information in I don't in most biopics, but I certainly don't. This is about her time in the UN, for the record. It starts literally with her packing up and leaving the White House, and Truman's going to move in. And then it's her time in the United Nations, and specifically getting the basic human rights list, article, whatever it is, getting that created.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I put stock in any of the specific things that happened, but it's just a hoot. It's not a good movie, but it's a very entertaining movie, and she's amazing.
Jean Stapleton is amazing.
So that was a very fun time.
She's just fantastic.
Saw the original Nightmare on Elm Street, which I had never seen. I get it. Like, I'm not going to say I think it's good. But for the time, it was doing a lot of things, and it's pretty impressive. I find it fascinating. The acting ability in that movie varies wildly amongst individual actors.
Mm.
There are times in that movie where people act really well, and then other times where they act really bad, and I don't know what's going on. My plan was to watch the first one and then watch the whole series because it was on Shudder.
Mm-hmm.
But I went to go get the second one, and it's not on Shudder anymore, and it's not anywhere that I wouldn't have to pay money for.
Mm.
For the second, the third, the fourth, like a bunch of them. That process has halted. And last night I was going to do the same thing with Friday the 13th because most of the Friday the 13th movies were on Max, but they're gone. And they're also not available anywhere that I wouldn't have to pay money. So I don't know what the fuck's happening. Halloween is coming. I assume somebody's going to get their hands on Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street movies. It would be bonkers not to.
I don't know. So I've seen Nightmare on Elm Street. Didn't like it, but I agree it had, you know, for the time, you understand what it's doing.
Yeah, and it was doing a lot of firsts and stuff like that.
Friday the 13th. I don't know if I've... Wait, who's the...
I mean...
Who's the bad guy in that? The
movie's kind of Jason Voorhees. Except in the first one, it's not Jason Voorhees, it's his mom.
Is that the one that takes place at a camp and all that?
Yes.
Well, maybe I have seen that then.
I mean, to be fair, what you've just described is 1,000 or
I
more.
know, but like I've all I was I was only interested in seeing the first installment of these. I didn't want to see the whole series. I just wanted to see, well, what's this about? What made this thing a phenomenon or whatever? So I think I
The
did.
first one had Kevin Bacon in it.
Yeah. And of all of the ones movies in that sort of space, I did actually kind of like Halloween. I didn't think it was a good movie, but I did like
Yeah,
conceptually.
see, we didn't. Halloween didn't work for us.
I thought conceptually it worked for, and in an execution, it worked more for me than the other movies. But I still didn't like it. I'm just saying
I think he
at the low
did
bar.
well. I think Carpenter. I in of these guys, I'm probably a bigger Carpenter fan than I am like a Craven fan or whatever. But not for Halloween. Halloween again, a lot of firsts. But also Halloween was going for something very specific that I don't give a shit about. And actually, Friday the 13th is very similar. It's this idea of just this mindless evil creature. And I
Sure.
find that supremely uninteresting.
Sure. Gotcha.
I want a villain with some personality.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we'll see. I mean, we're gonna get a bunch more. So here's a weird one. So I had seen this movie called Unwelcome. I was bumping around Shudder, and it appeared to be new young couple move into a house and run afoul of the goblins that live in the area. It's like they move to a small town and there's like goblins in the woods or whatever. And I'm like,
Like
whatever.
a full quarter type thing, or
Kind of, yeah. Or just a creature feature in a way. It seemed like. I didn't know. It was notable in that the female lead is the, oh, she's the woman who played Dutch in Killjoys, and she played Ghost in Ant-Man and the Wasp. She shows up in a lot of places. She played a side character in Ready Player One. I like her. I really loved her in Killjoys. And I like her a lot. And so it was in the back, but I never really wanted to watch her or anything. And the other night, Trisha's like, I want to watch one of these movies where, like, toxic waste affects the sheep and then they kill everybody. And I was like, I do have one about newlyweds move into small town and there's goblins. She's like, that might work. So we watched it. I recommend it. I'm not saying it's good. I'm also not saying it's bad. It's confusing. In my opinion, well, Trish said, I think it was a bad movie, but I really enjoyed it. I said, I think it was like five different movies because the tone switches so much, and it is very much trying to tell. There is a definite whiff of elevation to this horror. It's trying to get subtextual and metatextual, and sometimes it succeeds. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it succeeds, but just horrible. Sometimes you're like, I get what you're going for. It's not working, but I get what the. But some, other times not. Other times, there's about a 10-minute section in the middle where it's just gremlins and it's fucking awesome. But then other times where it is like a pretty disconcerting, like it's just all over the place and it is trying its darndest. But it's a hell of a time. I would recommend checking it out. Yeah, it's just it has such weird tonal shifts. It's crazy. But there's weird parallels because they move out to the country because they got attacked by people in London, and so they moved to a small place. But then there's similar like it, there's metaphors of like man's inhumanity to man, which is not my kind of thing. They're not goblins, by the way. They're red caps. They're a type of fairy. And they're a thing, and they're sort of a metaphor, but sometimes just, like I said, straight up gremlins. It's all over the place. It's weird. Also, Colm Meaney is in it, who I'm a fan of, but he's in a lot of shit now, and some of it's terrible. So I don't know that it's necessarily a recommendation when he's in stuff, but I like seeing him. I like seeing Chief O'Brien getting work, and he does a good job. So, but yeah, it's
Chief
called
O'Brien.
Unwelcome. It's interesting. And the ending is bonkers. Like, As soon as the final scene happened, and I immediately had like 14 questions about what the final scene meant, which will never be answered because the movie's over. But I think it's worth checking out. We saw Predator. Because for some reason, we're doing these completely out of order. We saw Predator 2, we saw Prey, and now we've seen the original Predator. I think we can be done, because the only two Predator movies left are the ones that are widely considered to be the shitty ones. And I didn't really enjoy the Predator movies. Predator's dumb. Predator as a concept is dumb, and Predator in execution is dumb. Predator makes no sense. And also is bad at its whole deal in every single movie. I was talking to William and I said, it really helps if you think of the Predators in the Predator movies as the alien version of rich dentists who go to Africa to kill a lion. Like, if you think of them as that, it becomes much better. But I will say, of the three movies, the original Predator was the best. It is hilarious. I'm slowly growing my experience with 80s action movies, and so I'm still getting used to things where, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger murders someone and then gives a quip, but I'm here for it. They're hilarious. I also love that we're all going to save hostages, and we do it by literally blowing up every structure in the compound in question, like a 5-minute sequence of just grenade explosions, and I'm just sitting there going, hope the hostage wasn't in that building. Hope the hostage wasn't in that building. Hope the hostage wasn't anywhere near there. Like, and it is so full of macho bullshit in that 80s way. It's hilarious. It's a hell of a time. So yeah, that was fun. Also, two future state governors in that movie.
Oh.
It's kind of fucked up. And then we saw a movie, which you can see fucking everywhere. We're shocked. We had had it on our list, and we decided to watch it. It's on Hulu, Disney Plus, and Shudder. It's called She Will.
Yeah, we're going to... That's on our list.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. It is incredibly well shot. It's gorgeous. It is a very unsubtle feminist piece, without a doubt.
Yeah.
It has some great performances. It has Alice Krieg in it, who I love, but I also, in looking more into her, she was around for decades before I knew her. People, sadly, because it's not her best thing, but might best know her as the Borg Queen.
Yeah,
from Star Trek: First Contact, and later in Voyager. But she's done all sorts of stuff, and she's amazing. And she is a retired movie star who just got a double mastectomy, and is now going to a solitary retreat in Scotland with her young caregiver. And it turns out the retreat is not quite so solitary, and there's weird people around. And also, the place has a history of having burned a lot of witches, and you know, crazy shit happens. It's a very weird movie. It's a movie that is hard. There's a lot of, like, what happened and what didn't happen and why. But yeah, it's a very good first. The co-writer and director has not directed a feature-length film before. They've directed some smaller ones, and they've written a handful of things. This very much feels like a first. This feels like a directorial debut. For all that the bad things that entails. But it's also the kind where I'm real excited to see her next movie.
Cool.
But I didn't dislike this one, but it is clearly very deeply personal. Like, I'm not going to get out of it what they were putting into it, because I'm not them. Like, it's very much a vision trying. We're trying to exorcise some specific demons within
ourselves. Sure.
But, right. was a pretty fun. It was a very interesting movie and visually very stunning. I really liked it.
We'll probably see it. Like I said, it's on our list.
It was a good time. It's not that long. I think that's all I got. I saw a commercial for vaccines. I've seen it a couple times. Like, who's that for?
Like, what kind
It's
of
literally
vaccine?
just a PSA that's like, you know what's awesome? Vaccines.
Oh,
If they
vaccines in
don't.
general.
Yes. You don't. Yeah. It wasn't get your COVID shot or, and it was just like, vaccines save you from diseases. They're like all the things that are true about vaccines. But like, I don't know who the commercial's for.
Well, there's a concern in public health about people who won't vaccinate their kids for measles and won't
Yes.
vaccinate.
I understand people who don't like vaccines. I do not understand how this commercial is going to change their mind. I would
I
say
th
this is an
yeah.
interesting thing because I've had to watch some commercials because I watch some free with ads things. And I have discovered I assume they're a political action committee, I don't know, called Galvanize Everyone. And they are clearly on sort of the left-leaning thing, but here's my thing. They make commercials that I think are trying to appeal to a conservative audience because they are very just sort of fact-based and discussing issues and how you like, they don't mention any candidates, they don't mention any political parties, and the commercials are very, they don't have a lot of salesmanship to them. They are very like, here's the issues, you should make sure you make your political decisions accordingly. And I really like that. I think that is a smart way to do, because if you're making most political ads are either just preaching to the choir or making the opposition look like assholes. And that's not going to convince the opposition to side with you. So they're pointless.
They whip
And
up the
this feels
base,
like it's
though. They
actually targeting people who might disagree with some actual arguments that they might consider. And I like that. This
attempting to
commercial for
persuade.
vaccines, none of that. This commercial for vaccines is could just be an advertisement for like Glade plugins or something. Like it's just, aren't vaccines awesome? Yeah. I don't know who it's for. It's weird.
Oh, I just want to mention briefly, I did see Arcadian with Nicolas Cage and I saw Smile. I saw those two things too.
I've been meaning to do Smile. Smile did not look like it appeals at all, but everybody keeps talking about it. I think we got to check it out. Tell me about Arcadian. We haven't watched it because despite the fact that Nick Cage is in it, it doesn't look like it's a Nick Cage movie. It looks like it's a story about these two young men of whom Nick Cage is their dad. Yeah,
There's
see, I don't care
he's
about that shit.
there's I was saying to Abby while we were watching it, there's even a significant portion of the film that he's not in. And it's like, why would Nicolas Cage sign up for a movie that he's barely in? This, I
Money.
guess, was like,
He
wow,
always needs money.
this doesn't seem, I mean, usually he's picking projects where he gets to chew the scenery and all that. No, it's not.
Yeah,
It's
I
barely
don't
a
think
Nick
he'd
Cage movie.
probably
It's
be in
barely a Nick Cage movie.
it. Meanwhile, I've heard about a really shitty movie called Jiu-Jitsu that he's in that I think I want to check out. It looks like it's real awful. I'm excited for that.
Smile was okay. It got better in the second half, but they did such a poor job getting you interested in the characters during the first half. It kind of.
Well, it's one of those that was a short film that everybody loved, so they made it into a feature length.
And you can tell. You can
Yeah,
tell that the half they added, I feel like the half they added was like, oh, we can make this a feature film by adding this whole first half. Which the idea was, perfectly good idea. Well, if we can make people care about the characters more so that the second half that's actually quite good has more heft and punch to it, but they completely fail. You don't care about the characters. You barely even know the characters. Second half's good plot-wise, but you're not as invested in the characters as you should be after all the time you just spent with them. So, yeah, it's one of
We'll
those.
see. I probably will check that out, probably without Trish. I'm gonna check out the new Beverly Hills Cop with Trish, which confuses me because I made her watch the first Beverly Hills Cop and she liked it okay, but she didn't want to see the second one. But for some reason, she wants to see the 30 years later, fourth one. So I'm confused about that, but we'll watch that. Because most people seem to think it's really good, and I love Beverly Hills Cop. Anyway, we should go, because we spent too long with Bible study in the beginning. If you'd like to avoid Bible whatever study. This was in the future, please email us. We have no emails right now. TheMagicalTalkingHead@gmail.com, and only you can stop us from more of whatever this is. So I need to go now. Because I am walking to, I have a haircut tomorrow, and I have decided I'm going to walk to my haircut because it is not very far. So today I am going to walk there to see how long it takes to get there so that I'm not late tomorrow. But it's me, so you better fucking believe I'm going to go into the salon and be like, hi, I have a haircut tomorrow. I just stopped to see how long it takes. I'll see y'all tomorrow. And I'm going to leave. So that's what I'm going to go do now. Y'all can talk amongst yourselves.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat. @gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.